points of view, you've expanded your bin. If you can take 25 points of view, you've expanded your bin greatly. If you can take 4 billion points of view, you've got a lot of bin. If you have all points of view, which is equal to no points of view, you are all being. That's absolute being. So, there's a kind of a little mechanical value in knowing that. See, if I forgot your name. Joe. If I'm speaking to Joe and I can take Joe's point of view in the conversation, there's more beingness than if I don't take my point of view.
But isn't the point of view like the map instead of the territory that Dr. Ball was talking about?
Yeah.
And isn't that map a higher order abstraction than experience?
Yeah.
And in that sense, aren't you getting farther away from experiences?
No. Nope. It looks that way, doesn't it? But it doesn't make sense. Let me tell you why. Because, you see, what makes... You have to... study a little physics to get this, unfortunately, but we'll do it. We don't care about that. See, there's a thing called nothing. And nothing is the ultimate abstraction. It's the simplest of all abstractions. That's it. That's the bottom line. If you study nothing very carefully, nobody can do that because people are always studying nothing as something because the mind only can work with something. See, the mind can't work with nothing, because nothing is an ultimate abstraction. I've forgotten her words for it, but it's the lowest order. That's it. You can't get any lower than that. The mind can't work with that, so it deals with something. It deals with nothing and something, and nothing isn't something. But please notice that nothing is, in fact, everything. Now, you could actually experience that, by the way. It's not very difficult to experience. It's difficult to think about. But it's not difficult to experience. As a matter of fact, you can't think about it, except... and that is, then you're not thinking about it, so it ruins it. But that's beside the point. The point is that you could experience that, but please notice that nothing is composed of everything. So that as you move from one point of view to a multiplicity of points of view, you're moving towards that everything which will be nothing.
Thank you.
Yes. What's your name?
Mike.
Michael, thank you.
How about spiritual
truth? Whose?
Spiritual. We have been having two opposites from a similar mathematical truth. Kind of like,
not the idea of linearity, but
something a little more
chaotic. Yeah, you see, we're dealing with this business about sets. The question is, I'm not sure. But I can answer it.
All right.
The question is, how do we resolve the dichotomy, the mutually exclusive puzzle, the double bind?
Thank you.
Yes, that's the question.
Reasoning paradox.
Yes.
Okay.
The way you resolve a paradox is by understanding, is by accepting the paradox. You see, the question is this up? And the answer is yes, it is up. I mean, it's obviously up. You're looking up, aren't you? Well, it's got to be up. Don't complicate it. But obviously, it's also down, you see? So now I have a paradox. This damn thing is up and down. Now, you know it can't be up and down, don't you? I mean, we all know it can't be up and down. It's either up or down. Except it is up and down, isn't it? Interesting, huh? It's both up and down. See, we say up or down. It's up and down. You are a machine. I know I'm not. I'm spirit or whatever your name for it. Huh? Well, but I didn't mean you were. So you've got the elements of this set, and none of the elements can describe the set. The set describes the elements. And then you've got another set over here. And these elements can describe this set. But this set or elements can't talk about this set or elements. But the set of all sets resolves the dichotomy. So a thing can be both everything and nothing at the same time. It's kind of like if you smoke a little grass, time seems to take longer. But if you and I are together, it's 10 minutes for you and 5 minutes for me. But when you can have both of those times at the same time, you've broken the double bind that they call it, we had about the same. Since I don't understand the answer and or the question, that's probably a dangerous place to stop. People wondering. That's
we got about 10 minutes.
Do we have 10 minutes?
Yes. Don't we have 10 minutes?
Yes. Sure.
I don't think we're going to let you go.
All right. I always stop early because I think that's the best part of the talk. All right. Yes.
How did your concept for EST evolve?
Yeah. First of all, I have to say, how did my concept of EST come along you up? Yeah. If I can get away with it, I won't. It happened experientially. It isn't a concept, it's an abstraction. In other words, I didn't have a set of experiences out of which I got information, out of which I made a conclusion. I had a conclusion out of which experience came, out of which process came. So that's where it comes from. It comes from nowhere. I mean, literally, I don't mean that, that's not a flippant answer. Literally comes from nowhere, which is where all experience comes from. Concepts come out of constructions of experiences. The experience happens out of time. You have an experience that happens out of time. Then you come into form. You have time, you have mass form, you have energy form, you have space. But you don't have space, by the way, of distance. Because space is experiential. Einstein discovered that physics did not study space, they studied distance. Because space was experiential and distance was something you measured, which was non-experiential, by the way. So you have an experience, and you have a construction from the experience, and feelings, and movement, and talk, and ideas, and all that stuff. And then you have the concept of the construction, and the concept of the construction is what you store. See, these are all concepts. A record is a concept of something. It's a map. It's a map, but it's a territory. There's something beyond the territory. Perhaps. And that something which is beyond the territory is direct experience. And that's where S came from. That's where it comes from for everybody who does it, by the way, it's from their own direct experience. It is not a set of ideas or concepts. I don't think I got a better set of concepts than you do. I think we're all the same. Frankly. That doesn't mean we're good at math. See, I think movies are lies, but I think it's great too. I think this will call spade spade. So if we're talking in concepts, we're going to say we're talking in concepts. And if then you don't get confused if people are telling you the truth. Nobody ever tells you the truth. There is no truth in the place of RAM except within you. The truth has to be experienced directly. It can't be experienced in time. If it's in time, it's a record of the truth. If I show you a picture of Dr. Hunt, you haven't seen Dr. Hunt. You've seen a record of Dr. Hunt. It isn't until you see her directly that you've seen her. That was a long answer, but we got 10 minutes and we're all out of questions. Somebody have yes.
Wouldn't this repetition begin in a person's life? Like, is there ever a time, right after birth, that a person is experiencing and not repeating?
No. You are born with a full stack of records. there's no question now, I don't think in anybody's mind, that naval experiences are recorded fully. Even the most conservative person who uses regression in any way would now acknowledge that people were not imagining that they were reliving their birth, they were in fact living. Most people who work with regression have found prenatal records. And almost anybody who's done any work with people in regression have found prenatal records, but they don't talk about those. I don't talk about them either because I think it's irrelevant. So all I can tell you is that at this given moment, everybody in this room has records of experiences before their birth. Did they actually experience them? I don't know. What the hell do I care? The point is they have the records of them. And if they have the records of them, then those records work with as much effectiveness on their being as if they actually have experienced that. Talking about the past lives and reincarnation stuff, but I cleaned it up, you notice. And I cleaned up because I consider it to be irrelevant. Really, I do. I think it's a great game, if you like all that stuff, you know, dig it. I can dig it too. But it's irrelevant. It's not necessary to understand our existence at the moment. What is very necessary to understand our existence at the moment is that a child, an infant, comes into the world with a full set of records. That's very good. Thank you for bringing that up, because I definitely would not have brought it up. I avoided all of it.
Last question on pain. If I step on my dog's paw and he screams, is he experiencing pain or is he resisting pain?
He's resisting pain. Dogs don't experience.
Okay, and now, isn't pain a natural biofeedback and, you know, the mechanism of the
body? I want to answer the questions here because it's really a very rational, very sensible point of view, and I'd like to damage it as fully as I can. And I don't want to damage it merely because it's sensible. I want to damage it because it doesn't work. First of all, the first question was.
Thank you very much.
Yes. The first question was, when I cut my dog's toe, his paw, doesn't he experience pain? The answer is no, dogs don't experience. Experience is to be conscious of being conscious. And I talked to my dog and he said he doesn't. Here's a pretty good evidence. It was a picked a long time ago, too. Dogs do experience. But they do not experiencing. And consciousness is the experience of experiencing. So, now, what about the feedback question? The gentleman's question was, if I feel pain, I've got a damn good feedback. If I put my hand on the fire, I hate that, you know? That's true, you ought to. And it would have hurt like hell while I got him in there. But it should have stopped her, you can take it out. And it doesn't. That's stupid. And I'll give you a perfect analogy. If you take a look in the animal kingdom, you see incredibly bizarre behavior. Around which aspect of life in the animal kingdom do you see the most bizarre behavior? You want to get one guess, and it's just too easy. No? Around what aspect of animal behavior do you see the most bizarre stuff? Sex. Yes. My goodness! Who to explain the fact of what happened these people are the birds and the bees and stuff. And if you take a look at it, at that, you see, at the human level, survival is best represented by the individual. I am the best representation of survival at the human level for me. If you take a step down and go into the higher animal kingdom, you find that survival is represented by the survival of the family. So what represents the greatest survival for family? Sex. And so you see the most automatic behavior in the higher animal kingdom revolving around procreation. If you go, it all fits, you know, and I have to take all that time. apples. But anyway, you see incredibly bizarre behavior. Behavior which makes no sense. You know, which isn't logical. You know, it isn't fitting. It isn't feedback anymore. What is your name, please?
Chris.
It isn't feedback anymore. It's automaticity. See, feedback is incredibly valuable. The problem with feedback is that the minute it becomes automatic, it's no longer feedback. It's mechanical. See, I would love to talk to the people studying feedback because they're attempting to force feedback into a mechanical mold. And that destroys the validity of the things they're discovering for me. So what?
Would you expand on that?
Yes. If you attempt to take feedback as a conscious-producing mechanism and put it into a mold of training, you destroy what you've actually discovered. See, that's not very strange, because there was a guy by the name of
Buddha who discovered some very far-out stuff. Everybody's used it to destroy it. Because they put it into a mechanical mold. They made a thing out of it, you know. They made a I'm a Buddhist thing out of it. I mean, if you're a Buddhist, you ain't a Buddhist, you know. Otherwise, you don't know what Buddhism's about. It's like if you're a Christian, you know, you don't go around being a Christian. That's very un-Christian. I wanted to take a minute before you go to thank you very much for being with me. I have a remarkable life. If you knew how ordinary I am, you would know that I have a remarkable life. I am not humble. I mean, if you haven't gotten that by now, I'll flip it in. I really have a very ordinary life. I have not done any remarkable things, and Dr. Hunt gave me a trip. I have to say quickly, I was introduced by the dean of the medical school at the University of California. And he said, I'm not going to do my normal introduction of a speaker where I go over his credentials and his degrees. I'm going to say something personal about Werner. He told about a little time we spent together. And I got up and I said, it was a good thing that the dean didn't introduce me in the normal way, otherwise the introduction wouldn't have taken any time at all, because I ain't got any degrees or credentials, you see. And I really don't. And I don't say that to, to say, hey, I don't have any degrees or credentials. Because I think it's stupid not to have degrees and credentials. I love that. I love to study. I think it's a gas. I really enjoy it. And had I been a little, perhaps, more in touch with myself when I was a youngster, I would have given myself a chance to do that. And I do take advantage of the opportunity to do that now. The only problem I have is that formalizing it takes more time than the studying of it, is it? But at any rate, my life is really incredible. You know, I want to tell you some of the incredible things in my life. My father knows that I love him. I mean, that's a very far out thing. I have told my father that I love him, and he knows it. He ain't dead, you see. Most people don't know that they love their father until after he's dead. I found out that I love my father and my mother before they died. I was able to communicate that. That's a very far out thing. My children love me. What that means is that my children don't need me. That's a very far out thing. My children do not keep me around because their survival is dependent on me. So I know that when my children spend time with me, when they interact with me, when they're with me, they're doing it out of choice. They know that they don't need me. They're clear about that. My wife left on a vacation in Europe, and just before she left, two very astounding things happened. Number one, she and I got together. We spent a lot of time together. Very, very, very little time together. My wife and I spent a little time together. She said, you know, I realized I now have everything I want in life. My life is complete. I have everything I want. There's nothing now I want. My life is complete. That's very far out to be married to a woman whose life is complete. A little after she told me about that, she took my son to school. And they asked her to fill out a form about what would you like to see change in your child. And she took the form home and she looked at it and she looked at it some more and she looked at it some more and she realized that her experience of my son was complete. There wasn't anything she wanted changed about him. That's incredible. 25,000 people have allowed me to participate in their lives. That's the ultimate gift. There is no bigger gift. There ain't anything you've got that's more worthwhile than the space for other people to participate in who you are. That's it. That's the ultimate gift.
Now, you know, I'm a very fortunate guy. 25,000 people have given me that gift directly, you know? And in a very, very trusting and very risk-taking way. And, you see, I got this once before, about, I guess, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years ago. All of a sudden, one day I woke up and I had it. And everything fell into place. I used to say it was like there was an army over the horizon getting ready for me, because when I got there, it was perfect. Everything touched terms, you know, everything worked out, everything. You know, I would be in an office I had in Beverly Hills, and people would call from San Francisco and say, the weather's terrible, and things are going to go bad. I said, don't worry about the weather, it'll be all right. The weather will be all right. No, I didn't know why the weather was all right. I knew that it would be all right. And that lasted a few months and disappeared. And I spent the next 8 or 10 or 12 years, whatever it's been, working literally night and day to get it back. I mean, you know, with no holds barred. That Zen story about the Zen master took the guy out and he said, I want to be enlightened. And he took him right out in the middle of the lake, shoved him under the lake until he was almost drowned. He picked him up out of the water. He said, well, you want to be enlightened as badly as you want to get that breath, come back. And and that's about how badly I wanted it. You know, I really didn't want it that bad. And I got it the low road, by the way, just so that you know. The low road is where you do everything that doesn't work. You leave anything out, you don't get it. You do everything that doesn't work. At any rate, my life really is, it's a tremendous experience. And it's really an experience that I love to share with people, and I really think that's what I get off on doing. And I'm really clear now about where it comes from. See, I don't need you to be all right. You don't need me to be all right. And Pearl's right. That's terrific to find that out, that I don't need you to survive, and you don't need me to survive with them. It's a very freeing thing. But I'll tell you something. I discovered very clearly that the quality of my life exists in the space that people have created for me. And I got a little smarter than I was last time, you see. I now know that, and I make sure when I talk to people, I acknowledge them for the space that they've created for me. So not because I'm a good guy, but because I like it this way. I'd like to acknowledge you for the space that you created for me, and particularly for allowing me to participate to some degree in your life. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed being here.
Thank you.